Welcome to Women Leading the Way radio show, where each time you'll hear from successful women CEOs, executives, and professionals, where we'll discover how they do what they do to be successful in business. We'll be interviewing women who have overcome big challenges, women who have incredible stories of lessons learned in dealing with adversity. We'll even interview women who have started and grown successful organizations, and women who are C-level executives with unique talents and positions. Our goal is to bring successful businesswomen together to share how they're leading the way in business today. Hey, good morning, everyone, and welcome to Women Lead Radio, brought to you by Connected Women of Influence. I'm Michelle Berquist, your host of Women Leading the Way, and I am delighted to introduce our leading lady today. But first, our topic is how to get smart with money. I don't know about you, but I definitely want to be smarter about money. And we're going to focus on a leading lady who has been there, done it, has some very wise experience for us today on how to get smart with money. Our leading lady today is Christine Cunliffe, and she is a partner in Bobo Strategy. And Christine, I want you to say hello to all of our listeners.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining us today.
Absolutely. And we're going to be talking about ding, ding, money, money. It's like, what I love is the conversation you and I had, that you have some lessons, some values, and your behaviors that either would-be entrepreneurs or just women in business can maybe capture about how to get smarter with money. So I'm excited to talk about this because I do feel so many of us as small business owners, you know, we think like Shark Tank, right? If we just got a big investor, everything would be rosy and hunky-dory as small business owners. Agree?
Absolutely. That's one of the biggest pitfalls and traps I see that people looking to grow their business or just get started tend to get hung up on. And it's one that with a few changes to how you think and some behaviors, it can be a barrier that people can get over very quickly.
Well, and I know you talk about, you know, you talk a little bit about the misconceptions that, you know, people have about spending money when they first start their business. Can you just, I mean, just for our purposes, we'll kick things off and go a lot deeper, but what are some of those misconceptions, you know, that you've either experienced or seen with startups?
Well, my story is that we started our business with $15 of capital, and we've grown it to something sustainable. Yeah, without the use of any outside debt. And that's something that people tend to hear about, but they're like, how do I get started? And what I've found over the years of running our business and being involved in other organizations is that there tends to be this notion that, well, I need, in order to be a legitimate business, I need to have certain things. Like I need to have an office. I need to have a certain brand, and that the brand sometimes takes too much of an emphasis, and that's where people can get into trouble. And so the way we run our business and we serve our clients is that we remind them that it's the value of the work you present. And the more you're able to focus on that, that's when you're going to see your business grow.
I love that, Christine. I mean, two things. One, I want people to know what Bobo Strategy is. So if you don't mind just giving kind of the Cliff Notes version of what Bobo Strategy is, and we'll get into it a little bit more. But just for emphasis on that, because I want to come in and talk to you about, you know, that whole mindset of taking on debt in business. But what is Bobo Strategy for a start? Give a little overview.
Yeah, so we are a company that's been around full-time since 2010. It was started by my business partner, who's also my husband. And we help businesses just like ours grow in a way that is sustainable in the long term. So we are all about bringing out value or helping our clients bring out value by keeping their costs low in respect to how they run things. And so we're always looking for opportunities to work with them to increase revenue while still decreasing their costs and doing it in a sustainable way.
I love that. And you kind of share a story about how what you and your husband did differently in your business to kind of identify cost savings and create growth. What were those things that you guys kind of did that you can share as tips for our listeners?
Yes, so I mean, it really is just focusing on what we have and making sure that the money that we were taking to grow our business was money we were earning. So we started off primarily in doing in service, and we still do a lot of service-based things for our clients. So things we would do to save money is, for example, we still do not have an office. We work out of a home office, and that works well for us. And it's one way we've been able to save a substantial amount of money on our operating costs. Other things we do, we're two full-time employees, and we work with outside contractors when we need assistance with certain things that our skill sets are not made for. Rather than looking to hire employees right away, we do that. And another thing that why we do that is as business owners, we understand that when we bring someone on as an employee, we're essentially taking responsibility for a significant part of their livelihood. And we know that if we don't do a good job in growing and keeping our business, someone that's relying on us to have food on the table. And so we try to do things smart in a way that everyone's able to benefit from that.
I love that because, you know, I have to share. It's like I think you're so smart to share that, and I wish more people would with small business owners and entrepreneurs that, you know, the office should not be what you aspire to because it's like a shiny light, right, like a bug with a shiny light that sounds so good and you think you'll be more official, and yet it just creates such a burden. And in today's world, with everything being so virtual and there's ways to kind of be lean and mean without taking on the office space, I think that's a really smart move. I mean, are there some other, and first of all, we do it too. Like our whole team in our business is all virtual. We don't even, we're like smoke and air, which I like, right? That we can be anywhere, be somewhere. But, you know, it depends on the business. But do you see, you know, when you think of a business and they start thinking about what else they could cut costs on, what's been your experience as far as like a top three or four that you see businesses spending money on things maybe they don't need to? And I think an office is a big one, right? Really question that. It's almost like you have to like almost be so big that, you know, you have to have an office, not that you aspire to have one, but what are some other cost savings you might recommend?
Yeah. So I would say the top three are office space. The second are full-time employees. And the third would be technology. And like with respect to technology, I see it a lot, even in large organizations where there's this feeling or need that people need to buy the latest and greatest and sexiest piece of technology because they think it's going to give them a competitive advantage. But what people don't realize is that the technology only works as effectively as your processes do. And if you have bad processes, that's where your resources are going to be eaten up. And processes are something you can improve or look at least start off internally looking at without having to expend a lot of costs at. And so those would be my three pieces. And we do a lot with our customers with respect to looking at how they can best optimize technology. So maybe it's not buying the latest and greatest software out there, but maybe helping them find a middle ground that's more cost effective, but will still give them and position them to gain the benefits that they would from purchasing something large, expensive, and probably and sometimes may put them over their heads in what they need.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, it's always interesting. I remember, gosh, a really great mentor of mine years ago who shared, you know, there's really four things you can do in business, and I'm going to try to remember the fourth because I always remember the first three, and that was, you know, cut costs like we're talking about, you know, look for ways that you can reduce your expenses on every level, right? I mean, anything you can do to make sure that that's, you know, paying attention to what our, at least now it always seems like the things, I don't know if you see this with businesses, but those subscriptions that we sign up for can be such an expense suck. I don't know for any other better way to put it, but you just don't pay attention to those ongoing recurring subscription-based expenses, and that's something to watch for. And then the other big ones were increased profits and increased sales, right? So I don't know if I know there's a fourth one, but it's escaping me what that would be. But talk more about Bobo strategy. I mean, first of all, like, how did you and your husband, how did you guys come up with your business idea? I love what you're all about because you're like so, I mean, I'm going to use a kind of woo-woo word, but you're so holistic in how you work with small businesses or middle market businesses, because I think small is your focus, right? And helping them look at everything about their business to be more efficient and more profitable. Is that right?
Yeah, correct. I would say our ideal customer would be someone who has a growth mindset and would be able to value kind of getting as much from us as they can. Like one of the ways we market ourselves is that we are your one-stop shop for technology, marketing, finance, and HR. And so Bobo Strategy started off as more of a side project between my partner and I. We were looking for a way to make more money, and we started taking on these different projects that we would find either through word of mouth, Craigslist, or the platforms such as it used to be called Elance, but I'm not sure what it was called today. And so we would take on projects from that and, you know, do them to make a couple bucks. And, you know, we realized that, hey, this is fun. And this is something we could do without having to spend much money on our end. And so we just kept taking on projects. And while we were doing that, we had an opportunity to, I guess I would say, hone our craft with respect to developing our skills with respect to customer service and marketing, again, all with very limited costs. And we were able to obtain some clients from that who have become long-term partners and to this day are still with us. And so it really was for us something that we thought going to do for extra bucks, but actually grew into something substantial and that we were able to grow with very little costs and allow us to also have fun at the same time.
No, I want to say I love your mindset, and I think more business owners should get that, you know, there's always that analogy out there that says it takes money to make money, right? And yet it's like taking on debt can be good, but it also, I mean, it really kind of burdens a business, you know? I mean, can you share an example of how, I mean, I just want to get an example from you as far as a business that maybe took on debt that they shouldn't have and how it impacted their business and maybe what you would recommend, you know, if somebody decides that, you know, they want to take on a business loan or something like that, what they should really, truly consider before they go down that path. Any thoughts?
I don't know the situations of all my clients, but I'll give some global advice and some advice that I've had from starting other organizations from scratch. And so, Michelle, as one of the things you know that I do as a volunteer is I am the chapter director of a non-for-profit in Orange County called Chick Tech, and our mission is to increase and promote the number of women in tech. And when that organization started here, we were essentially given a loan from our headquarters to get us started. And I remember that having that loan loom over my head as the person responsible for the organization here really did impact the way I was able to do certain things. And what I mean by that is, anytime that I owe someone money or I see someone that owes something money, that's leverage that someone has over me. And as a business owner, I don't like having that leverage over, or someone having that over me. So whether it's venture capital or a loan from the bank, that's always how I viewed it. And a significant part of the joy of having your own business is being able to call the shots in what you want to do, how you want to do it, when you want to do it. And when people have a loan, you don't necessarily have that 100%. And so with that loan hanging over my head, I was doing anything and everything to raise money and get that off my plate. And I will tell you, we've met that milestone, and it feels very different in running that organization because we have a lot more say in how we want to grow and the level we want to grow at. And that is what makes a business sustainable. You are, as a business owner, the person, the expert. And for anyone that wants to grow or start a business, it is your knowledge, your expertise, what you bring to the table that should be the emphasis. And so the more you can get other parties or people off your back, the better chance you have of thriving in the long term.
Yeah, no, I love that. I love that. Well, you know, I mean, the other big thing, and I'm just curious what you see with the businesses you work with, because, you know, you're like all-encompassing technology, marketing, HR, and finance. And, you know, what I have always seen with small business owners, Christine, is how many think money and debt, you know, or even investors are going to get them to the promised land, right? And I use those words very specifically and on purpose because that's not the case, right? Because what many times happens is businesses don't really have a good sales and marketing engine that's running to be able to create excitement over their services or products, or it's like they just don't have a good sales process. I mean, I know I struggle with it for our company, you know. I mean, every business does. Nobody that starts out as an entrepreneur says, okay, I want to get into sales, right? None of us want that, but that is the role we have. I'm curious what your thoughts are on what you see with businesses and kind of that thinking they're taking on debt, but many times I see it's about sales, you know, or obviously being more efficient in how they do what they do. But what are your thoughts on what you've seen about the sales process of small businesses?
I would say that one of the key drivers to our success has been being able to share our story. So our clients, the ones that have stuck with us for a while now, understand what we're trying to do, and they, you know, our method of doing business, you know, bootstrapping and not taking on debt resonates with them. So that's kind of become part of our value prop and culture and why people come to us, because because we are able to grow our business without having any or limit much less outside influences, we're able to be more authentic. And that I would say that has been a byproduct that I didn't expect when initially starting our business and running it this way, but it has become one that has been one of our biggest differentiators and strengths. And so when you're able to run your business without the debt, and, you know, as I mentioned in the previous question, be yourself and let your skill set stand out. Your authenticity and what you truly bring to the table is going to bring in the sales, because it's still a rarity in today's market to find, businesses to work with that can truly have that authenticity. And it's such a differentiator that people tend to forget about. I think also with the look for bringing in outside partners or capital is people also look to them for the knowledge of how to bring in the sales. And I challenge that. So when we started off and we were at a point in our business where we were like, okay, well, we want to bring sales up a little more, there were a lot of things that we did here in Southern California to try to do that were free or low costs are ultimately a good value. And so we would attend meetups, which costs nothing other than your time, going to SCORE events. So like when we had questions about, okay, you know, we're thinking about making this tweak, reaching out to someone who would give us that advice for free, and doing that. And I also never underestimate the power of a good book. When I have questions, I'm going through something I'm trying to work through right now with Chick Tech, I'm picking up books and reading about it. Those are some free options. And Southern California is so great because there's so many of that, or so much of that.
Absolutely.
Here. That leads me to my...
Yeah, well, I got to ask my big question. So if you're like this, you know, ominous book reader, it's like what has been one of the most telling and, I guess, maybe business-changing, eye-opening books for you in business? Do you have a recommendation for one or two books for our listening audience?
I would have two books. And surprisingly, they're not necessarily business, but they have drawn that mindset. The first is Dave Ramsey's Total Money Makeover. So many people know Dave Ramsey as the personal finance guy. But when I picked up his book, I was like, this is exactly what we're doing. And he does a fantastic job of bringing in the relationship between personal finance and having a good financial understanding of personal finance. And there are lessons within it that we have applied to our business that have helped us with our sustainability. And then the second one is The Millionaire Next Door, which is, I believe, by Thomas Stanley. And
Girl, that's an old book. Oh, my God. That one's like Big Hat, No Cattle. I'm like that. I'm
yes.
a love of that book. I'm sorry. Tell our listeners about that book, because that is an oldie but a goodie.
So the initial thing I got out of that book is that millionaires aren't necessarily the flashiest people out there. And as I continue to meet people, I am realizing that. And I would say I have an affinity with working with, I guess, what people call blue jeans millionaires. That anytime I have the opportunity to serve someone like that or work with them is an opportunity I jump at. But for our business, I think that book gave us the extra support to realize that this is the way we have grown our business, and the decisions we have made are ones that are best practices for people that want to build wealth and be givers and be productive and positive contributions to society. So those have been my two books, and I usually read them at least once a year. But while they're personal finance related, they definitely have made an impact in how we have run our business.
Gosh, I love those. And, you know, to our listeners, I mean, seriously, Dave Ramsey is like the king of, you know, how to like real make money work with what you have. And if you want to get out of debt or any of that, that's crazy, crazy good. And then The Millionaire Next Door, seriously, Christine, I read that so many years ago. And I was in lending, and it was like it really changed even for me how to see people not on what they drive with all the bling and the Jaguars and the, you know, the custom suits and things like that. It was look beyond that, because millionaires typically are not just, you know, flaunting their wealth around. And that is very telling, right? The people that have money versus those that are, let's just say, leveraging money and in debt to the hilt, right? I think that was
exactly.
Another conversation there. Yeah, I love it. So I'm going to ask you, just in a couple of minutes we've got left, I know this time always goes fast. This has been fascinating. I'm just going to say I would love you back for another interrogation, girl. We were laughing earlier for all of our listeners. I was telling Christine I was going to interrogate her, and she was like, what? any rate, I think you're fabulous and wonderful. I don't know if our listeners know, but you are an award-winning entrepreneur in many ways, and you're one of our past Sue Talk presenters for Sue Talk. So you gave an awesome Sue Talk just a year ago. But I'm curious where's the future for you and Bobo Strategy? Like, where are you looking to go with this? I know you said, you know, the mindset is to kind of really be debt-free, and you guys are focused on being very authentic. I mean, I got some really great slices of advice, but how do you see the future for Bobo Strategy, and what are maybe some just wise words of advice you can share with our listeners about how you see, you know, the future of where you're going to go?
I think that, you know, we have our goals, you know, whether they be numbers or different industries we would like to get clients from. But I think, I would say in the past year or two, which when we've really experienced the most growth we've had so far, what has worked for us is actually just thinking of smaller next steps. So it could be, okay, how many people are we going to talk to this week? So, what is our monthly goal with respect to revenue coming in? And we found is, you know, there's a lot of work for us to continue to do there. And so rather than thinking big, like, I don't know what I'm going to be doing 5 years from now, I hope it's something just as fun. And I hope it's something that gives me the flexibility to spend time with my family and travel. I mean, because that's ultimately, why is being able to do that and being able to do it with my life partner. It's, I guess for us, it's one day at a time. And, you know, going back to Dave Ramsey, you know, the tortoise always wins, and it's just continuing to do that and finding ways to continue to get involved in our community.
Woo! I don't know, girl, but you inspired me today. That was pretty awesome. You know, I mean, every day, it just for so many of us as small business owners, it's like, you know, one day you're on this high, you're just like, woo, life is good, business is great, it's like things are awesome. And then, you know, you go a couple days later or the following week and you're just like, oh, man, how am I going to get through this, you know? Money or time or resources or employees or marketing or any of it, it's never ending. And I just love the perspective you gave. So here's what I always ask my guests on my radio show is not to, like, put too much pressure on you, but I know you're a quick thinker, and that is I want you to think of probably something inspirational or motivational that you can leave us with, and, you know, it's kind of like a drop-the-mic moment. What can you leave us with that are going to make our listeners go wowza for their time in listening to us? No pressure.
Oh, wow.
I know.
You stumped me. I think what I would say is the American dream is still very real and very attainable. And I feel like, especially for a millennial like me, we tend to feel a little discouraged. And I would encourage people to challenge that notion that it's not attainable. It's attainable. It takes a while and it takes the work. And the things that you need to do on paper are very easy to do, but it takes work to challenge your mindset and behaviors. And I think that if you are able to do that a little at a time, including myself, we all become better people for it. So keep thinking it's possible and keep making small changes and thinking about what's the next thing I can do to do better. And things will come to you when you do that.
Okay, there you go. That is a wrap. I thank you, Christine Cheese. You know, you did great on the spot. I knew you would. Thank you so much for being our leading lady today. And to all of our listeners, I know you know this, but I say it every time, so do our other hosts. We are here every Monday morning at 9 a.m. and Fridays at 2 p.m. for another Women Lead Radio show with some fascinating women and, I have to say, men in business. Our next show is going to be this Friday at 2 p.m. And one thing I always ask our listeners is, what are you doing to support and help advance women in business. We'll see you on the next show. Thank you for listening.
Women Leading the Way is produced by Connected Women of Influence, the premier private membership organization where like-focused business-to-business executive and professional women connect, collaborate, and cultivate a vast network of high-level affiliations, resources, and professional relationships. For more information about Connected Women of Influence, please visit our website at connectedwomenofinfluence.com.